A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one from the middle of an apartment move. And honestly, the image he painted is going to stick with me. He's got his platform trolley, he's loading Euro boxes, ratchet straps are cinched, everything's fitting beautifully, and then he goes to put on the second box and the whole thing starts rolling away, just making a break for it down the pavement. And that's the moment you realize wheel locks aren't a nice to have. They're the difference between a moving tool and a moving hazard.
He caught it, thankfully, but that split second where you're lunging after a loaded trolley on a slope, that's not a design oversight you notice in the product photos. It's one you notice when you're already committed.
This is the thing about the hybrid move strategy. Daniel's doing part of this with professional movers, part of it himself with the trolley, which is exactly what more people are doing post-pandemic. The self-haul portion of urban moves has surged because people realize they can handle the small stuff themselves and save the pros for the furniture. But the gear that's marketed for this, these consumer-grade platform trolleys, they're really designed for warehouse floors. Flat, smooth, indoor. Not Jerusalem sidewalks with 5-centimeter curbs and a slight grade you didn't even notice until your trolley decided to relocate itself.
Daniel's specific situation is almost a perfect case study in this mismatch. He's doing 400 meters across the city center. That's not a quick roll from the truck to the elevator. That's a real urban route, with curbs, dips, textured pavement. And the Stanley trolley he bought ships with 10-centimeter hard casters and zero brakes. That's barely taller than the curb he's trying to climb.
He's asking two things, essentially. The immediate fix. Can he make a chalk? Something to jam under the wheels so the trolley stays put while he's loading? And then the more ambitious question, can he replace those casters entirely? Maybe even go pneumatic, to actually handle the terrain he's dealing with?
What I love about this prompt is that it's not theoretical. He's in the middle of the move right now. He needs answers that work today, not a research project. But at the same time, the engineering questions here are genuinely interesting. Chalk physics, caster mechanics, the trade-offs between different wheel materials and diameters. There's a whole world of overlooked specs in something as mundane as a dolly wheel.
That moment of panic, the trolley making a break for it, is exactly where we start today. Because if you've ever had a loaded cart start drifting while you're mid-lift with a box, you know it's not just annoying. It's dangerous. And the fixes range from a 50-cent piece of scrap wood to a full caster swap that changes how the whole rig behaves.
The stakes are higher than people think. 100 kilograms on a 5-degree slope generates about 9 kilograms of horizontal force. That doesn't sound like much until you realize that's enough to push a brakeless trolley into traffic, into a parked car, into your shins. The physics is unforgiving, and most people don't think about it until they're chasing their own equipment down the street.
Which, by the way, is a very specific kind of panic. You're not running after a soccer ball. You're running after something heavy and metal that you just spent money on and loaded with your belongings. There's dignity at stake.
Here's what gets me about the Stanley trolley specifically. It's not a bad product. For what it's designed for, a warehouse, a loading dock, a big box store floor, those 10-centimeter hard casters are fine. Smooth concrete, no grades, no curbs. But the moment you take it outside, the design assumptions fall apart. And the thing is, Stanley knows people use these for moves. They just don't ship with brakes because brakes cost money, and most buyers don't know to look for them until it's too late.
It's the classic consumer product trap. You don't know which spec matters until you've already bought the wrong one. Wheel locks and caster diameter, these aren't the things you're comparing on the product page. You're looking at the deck size, the weight capacity, whether it folds, and then you're on a sidewalk with a slight incline watching your life roll away.
The escape mechanism is worth understanding, because it's not just gravity being gravity. A 10-centimeter wheel hitting a 5-centimeter curb, that's not a bump, that's a wall. The wheel radius is 5 centimeters. The curb is also 5 centimeters. That means the wheel has to climb something equal to its own radius. The force required spikes dramatically, about 1.7 times the load weight just to get over that single curb. So if Daniel's got 60 kilos of boxes, he's pushing against roughly 100 kilos of resistance at the curb face. That's when the trolley jerks, the load shifts, and if you're not braced, it's gone.
The curb doesn't just make it harder to push, it makes the whole rig unpredictable.
And on a slope, even a gentle one, a brakeless caster is just a bearing waiting to rotate. There's nothing in the system that says stay. The swivel lets it find the path of least resistance, which is always downhill.
Which brings us to the question Daniel's really asking, whether he knows it or not. These two approaches he's considering, the chalk and the caster swap, they're not just different price points, they solve different problems. The chalk solves the parking brake problem. It says, when I'm stationary, stay stationary. The caster swap solves the driving problem. It says, when I'm moving over actual urban terrain, roll without fighting me.
The chalk is the one he can solve today, mid-move, with a trip to the hardware store or even something in the apartment. The caster swap is the project for next week, after the boxes are moved. But both are worth understanding properly, because most people treat wheel locks as an afterthought when they're actually the primary safety system on any rolling load.
A trolley without brakes isn't a tool. It's a suggestion. Let's talk about the quickest fix first. The humble chalk. And I say humble, because most people think a chalk is just jamming a rock under the wheel and calling it done. But chalk physics is real, and getting it wrong means the difference between a trolley that stays put and one that slowly, politely, rolls into traffic.
The core of it is friction. A chalk works by creating a wedge between the wheel and the ground, and the only thing holding that wedge in place is the friction at two interfaces, the chalk against the road and the wheel against the chalk. If either one slips, the whole system fails.
This is where material choice stops being academic. Hardwood against asphalt has a friction coefficient somewhere between 0.6 and 0.8. Rubber against asphalt is 0.8 to 1.0. That cap sounds small, but it's the difference between holding a 100-kilo load on a slope and watching your chalk skid across the pavement like a hockey puck.
The angle matters too. For a 10-centimeter caster, you want a wedge cut at about 15 degrees. Steeper than that, and the wheel just rolls up and over the chalk instead of biting into it. Shallower, and the chalk slides out from under the wheel because there's not enough vertical face to catch the tread. A 2x4 cut at 15 degrees gives you the right geometry. It's basically a ramp that stops being a ramp at exactly the point where the wheel's forward momentum converts into downward pressure.
The hidden variable in all of this is weight distribution. A chalk fails when the horizontal force from the load exceeds the friction force at the chalk road interface. So, on a 5-degree slope, a 100-kilo load generates about 8.7 kilos of horizontal force. That's the number trying to push the chalk. On dry asphalt, a rubber chalk provides roughly 80 kilos of friction resistance. Huge safety margin, no problem. But on wet asphalt, that drops to around 50 kilos. Still fine for an evenly loaded trolley. But if the load shifts, and the weight comes off the chalked wheel even slightly, that friction number plummets.
This is exactly where the cardboard wedge story comes in, the one Daniel mentioned about someone using a folded piece of cardboard as a makeshift chalk. Cardboard has a compression strength of about 3 megapascals. Hardwood is around 50 megapascals, so when that cardboard wedge gets wet or just takes the weight of a loaded trolley, it deforms. It squishes down, loses contact with the wheel, and suddenly, there's no chalk at all. The trolley rolled on a 3-degree slope, barely a slope, because the chalk effectively disappeared under load.
The takeaway is, material matters, angle matters, and moisture matters. A 2x4 wedge cut at 15 degrees costs about 50 cents and takes 5 minutes to make. It works great on dry pavement. But if it rains, or if you're rolling through puddles, that wood soaks up water. The surface gets slick, and your friction coefficient tanks. You'd need to cut a fresh one.
Which is why commercial rubber chalks exist. Rhino Gear and Esko make them, $15 to $30, and they're rated for specific wheel diameters. For a 10-centimeter caster, you need a chalk with a contact arc of about 5 to 7 centimeters. That's the curved surface that actually cups the wheel. If the arc is too small, the wheel climbs over it. Too large, and the chalk is designed for car tires and it's too tall for a caster. It'll tip the wheel sideways instead of stopping it. Car chalks are a common mistake. People grab them from an auto parts store thinking a chock is a chock, but they're built for wheels that are 60 centimeters across, not 10.
The homemade 2x4 works today, costs nothing, but has a shelf life measured in weather events. The $20 rubber chock lasts years, works wet or dry, but it's bulkier to carry on a moving run. And neither one solves the fundamental problem, which is that you're still pushing a brakeless trolley over curbs.
The chock is a parking brake. It answers one question, will this thing stay where I left it? It does nothing for you while you're actually moving. And for a 400-meter urban route, you're stopping and starting constantly, loading, unloading, repositioning. Every stop is a moment where you're fishing around for a chock, wedging it in, making sure it's seated. That friction adds up over a dozen runs.
Which brings us to the built-in brake conversation. And this is where things get interesting, because not all caster brakes do the same thing. There are two types that matter here. Directional locks stop the wheel from rotating, but let the caster keep swiveling. Total lock brakes stop both, the wheel rotation and the swivel. For a platform trolley on a slope, directional locks are almost useless, because even with the wheel locked, the caster can still pivot, and the whole trolley can drift sideways downhill.
It's a really counterintuitive failure mode. You lock the wheel, you think you're safe, and then the caster just rotates. The locked wheel becomes a ski. Total lock is the only thing that actually freezes the trolley in place, and it's what Daniel would need if he's loading boxes on anything that isn't dead flat.
The mechanism on these is worth understanding because it explains why some brakes last and some don't. Replacement casters from Caster City or Hamilton use a cam action lever. You step on a pedal. It presses a brake pad directly against the wheel tread. Simple, mechanical, no hydraulics. They're rated for up to 300 pounds per caster. But the brake pad material is the weak point. Nylon pads are common because they're cheap and durable, but nylon on a wet wheel loses grip almost completely. Rubber pads hold better in the wet, but wear faster. So you're trading longevity for safety, which is not the trade you want to be making on a moving day. The thing is, Daniel's move is 400 meters with multiple stops. A chock means bending down, positioning, testing, every single time. A total lock caster means stepping on a pedal. For a dozen runs, that's the difference between a moving system and a moving ordeal.
Here's where the caster diameter question stops being theoretical and starts being the thing Daniel's actually feeling in his arms. That 10-centimeter wheel, it's not just small, it's mathematically wrong for what he's asking it to do. The force required to roll a wheel over a step isn't linear. There's a formula, and it's brutal for small wheels.
Walk me through it.
The force to climb a step of height h is the load weight multiplied by the square root of 2rh minus h squared, all divided by r minus h, where r is the wheel radius. For a 10-centimeter wheel, radius 5 centimeters, hitting a 5-centimeter curb, that force is 1.7 times the load weight. So if Daniel's got 60 kilos of boxes, he's pushing against roughly 100 kilos of resistance just at that one curb. For 400 meters of Jerusalem sidewalk, he's basically doing interval weight training.
If the wheel were bigger...
Double the diameter to 20 centimeters, radius 10 centimeters, and that same 5-centimeter curb drops the required force to 0.7 times the load weight, from 1.7 to 0.7. Same load, same curb, different wheel. The curb goes from being a wall to being a speed bump.
The wheel diameter isn't a comfort thing. It's a mechanical advantage thing. A 10-centimeter wheel on a 5-centimeter curb is like trying to push a shopping cart up a flight of stairs.
And this is where the pneumatic tire idea gets interesting, because it's not just about diameter, it's about how the wheel interacts with the obstacle. A hard caster has to climb. A pneumatic tire deforms around the edge of the curb, creating a temporary ramp out of its own sidewall. But here's the catch, and it's the one most DIY guides gloss over, you cannot just put pneumatic tires on existing casters. The caster assembly, the yoke, the bearings, the stem, is built for a specific wheel type and diameter. You have to replace the entire unit.
Daniels, can I add pneumatic tires as an aftermarket modification? The answer is yes, but it's a caster swap, not a tire swap.
Coulson and Albion both make 8-inch pneumatic casters with 5/8-inch stems. That's 20 centimeters, which puts you right in that sweet spot where curb force drops below 1 to 1. They run $25 to $40 each. but each one adds 2 to 3 kilograms, the tire itself, the steel yoke, the bearings. Across 4 casters, you're adding 8 to 12 kilos to the trolley before you've put a single box on it, and that extra weight isn't free. On flat pavement, pneumatic tires have 15 to 20% higher rolling resistance than hard casters, because the tire deforms constantly as it rolls. You're trading curb performance for flat ground efficiency.
Which, for a 400-meter urban route, that's mostly flat with occasional curbs. That might be a bad trade. You're paying a weight penalty for the whole distance to solve a problem that exists at maybe 10 points along the route.
There's another issue. There's a Reddit case study from the DIY subreddit. Someone converted a Harbor Freight dolly to 8-inch pneumatic casters using a $40 adapter plate. It handled gravel and curbs beautifully, but the deck sat 5 centimeters higher, which shifted the load's center of mass upward by about 3 centimeters. The whole rig got tippier. On a side slope or a curb cut at an angle, that higher center of gravity meant the load wanted to lean. The user said they almost lost a stack of bins on a sloped driveway.
Bigger wheels solve the curb problem but create a stability problem. Everything's a trade.
Which is why there's a middle path that I think is actually the sweet spot for Daniel's specific move. Shepherd Caster makes a 6-inch solid rubber caster with total lock brakes. 15 centimeters diameter, so you're above that critical threshold where curbs become manageable. The bump threshold for 5 to 10 centimeter curbs is 6 inches minimum for solid rubber with a tread pattern. The rubber deforms just enough around small obstacles to create that temporary ramp effect, but you don't have the air pressure maintenance or the weight penalty of pneumatics. Total lock, so both wheel rotation and swivel. That's the thing, it solves both of Daniel's problems in one swap. The brake problem and the terrain problem. $15 per caster, so $60 for a set of 4. Each one adds about a kilogram, so 4 kilos total, versus 8 to 12 for pneumatics. And the rolling resistance on flat pavement is barely higher than the hard casters he's got now.
Compare that to the pneumatic route. 8-inch pneumatic non-locking casters. $100 for 4 plus a $40 adapter plate if the bolt pattern doesn't match, and you still don't have brakes. You've solved the curb problem, but you're right back to chasing your trolley down the street.
You're checking tire pressure before every move. Pneumatic casters need 40 to 60 PSI, and if one's low, the trolley pulls to that side. It's not a set-and-forget upgrade.
The installation question becomes relevant. If Daniel wants to do this, swap in those Shepherd 6-inch solid rubber locking casters. What's he actually facing?
A 10mm wrench and about 30 minutes. The Stanley trolley almost certainly uses a 3-inch by 2-inch mounting plate pattern with 5/16-inch bolts. That's the consumer standard. But here's the thing to check before ordering. Some manufacturers use a metric pattern that's close but not identical. And if the holes don't line up, you're drilling new ones into the trolley deck. If that happens, there's a $10 adapter plate available that converts between the common patterns. It's not elegant, but it works.
If the stem diameter doesn't match the caster yoke spore,
that's where you get wobble and eventually bearing failure. The stem has to be a precise fit. If it's loose, every bump rattles the connection and the bearing race gets hammered. The Shepherd casters use a standard half-inch stem, which matches most consumer trolleys, but it's worth measuring before you buy. 5 seconds with a caliper saves you a wobbly trolley and a ruined bearing 3 moves from now.
We've covered the physics and the options. Now, let's get practical. What should Daniel actually do right now, mid-move?
The immediate fix is the chalk. He can cut a 2x4 at 15 degrees in about 5 minutes, and it'll hold a loaded trolley on dry pavement. Test it on the actual slope before trusting it with a full load. If it skids at all, the angle's wrong or the surface is too slick. The safer bet, if he can swing by an auto parts store, is a $20 rubber chalk from Rhino Gear or ESGO rated for a 5 to 7 centimeter wheel contact arc. That works wet or dry, and he'll own it for the next move.
For the permanent upgrade after the boxes are moved.
Replace all 4 10cm hard casters with 6-inch solid rubber casters with total. Lock brakes from Shepherd Caster. 15cm diameter, so you clear the bump threshold for those 5 to 10cm curbs. Total lock means the wheel won't rotate and the caster won't swivel. The trolley stays exactly where you park it. $60 for a set of 4, about a kilogram added per caster, and the whole swap takes a 10mm wrench and 30 minutes.
The pneumatic tire fantasy?
Overkill for a 400-meter paved route. 8-inch pneumatics from Colson or Albion, run $100 plus for 4, add 8 to 12 kilos total, need air pressure checks before every use, and still don't give you brakes unless you buy locking versions, which cost even more. For curbs under 10 centimeters, 6-inch solid rubber with a tread pattern handles them without the weight penalty or the maintenance headache.
One thing to check before clicking buy, the bolt pattern. Most consumer trolleys use a 3-inch by 2-inch mounting plate with 5/16 inch bolts. If Daniel Stanley has a different spacing, there's a $10 adapter plate that solves it. Measure twice, order once.
Verify the stem diameter while you're at it. The Shepherd casters use a 1/2-inch stem, which matches most trolleys, but if there's a mismatch, you'll get wobble that destroys the bearings. 5 seconds with a caliper now saves a ruined caster later.
You've got your upgraded trolley with locking casters, the chalk in your pocket for good measure, and a moving system that actually stays where you put it. But this raises a bigger question about the tools we're all using for urban moving.
And the question I keep coming back to is, should trolley manufacturers be required to ship with brakes on all models over a certain load capacity? Because right now, the default is brakeless, and the default is wrong. A platform trolley rated for 300 kilos that can't be parked isn't a finished product. It's a liability with a handle.
The counter-argument is always cost. Adding total lock casters to every unit would raise the retail price by maybe $20 or $30. And manufacturers will tell you that most buyers don't need brakes because they're using the trolley indoors on flat concrete. But that's a self-fulfilling assumption. People don't use brakes because their trolleys don't have them, so the feature doesn't show up in consumer demand surveys, so manufacturers don't add them.
Meanwhile, someone's chasing their belongings down a Jerusalem sidewalk. The market is lagging the actual use case. As urban DIY moving keeps growing, and it is growing, we're going to see more people pushing consumer-grade equipment through terrain it was never designed for. The question is whether the product design catches up before someone gets hurt.
The thing that gives me a sliver of optimism is modularity. There's no technical reason we couldn't have caster systems where the wheel and brake are swappable without tools. A quick release pin, a standardized stem, and you could go from hard casters to pneumatics to locking solid rubber in 30 seconds depending on the job. The parts all exist. Nobody's packaged them that way yet.
That's the future I'd actually pay for. Not a single trolley that tries to be everything, but a platform that lets you configure the wheels to the move. Urban move with curbs? Click in the 6-inch solid rubber with total lock. Gravel and grass? Swap to pneumatics. The adapter plates and stem standards are already mostly compatible. Someone just needs to build the ecosystem.
Until then, we're cutting 2x4s at 15 degrees and hoping it doesn't rain.
Which, honestly, there's something satisfying about that too. But mostly I want my trolley to stay where I left it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1940s, researchers studying muon catalyzed fusion discovered that when muons are injected into a deuterium-tritium mixture, the resulting fusion reactions produce an acoustic signature in the ultrasonic range, a faint but measurable chirp at roughly 200 kHz, detectable only with hydrophones originally designed for submarine warfare. The phenomenon was first documented at a facility near Juba in what is now South Sudan, where the ambient seismic quiet made the signal distinguishable from background noise.
I have no idea what to do with that information.
A fusion chirp. In South Sudan, with submarine equipment, I'm going to need a minute.
Don't take too long. We've got a trolley to push.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flemingtop for making this show possible. If you enjoyed this episode, do us a favor and leave a review wherever you listen. It helps other people find the show. You can also reach us at show@myweirdprompts.com. I'm Herman Poppleberry.
I'm Korn. Wheels down, brakes on.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head,
send it in, we'll chase the thread.
My weird props, that's the close from sloth, from man, from long ear host.
My weird props, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.